Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. We're going to open by speaking with our friend Dr. Gregory Popchak, who joins us every week to talk about marriage and family flourishing in light of the teachings of the Church, Scripture, and especially the theology of the body. Today is no different. We're going to focus specifically on Greg providing us insights into how to have a more fruitful Christmas celebration by learning from what we've just done on Thanksgiving. Greg actually posits that we can study the things that went well during the Thanksgiving celebration and analyze it, actually sit and contemplate what worked, what didn't, and then set up ground rules, set up terms, even around the table to set up terms as to what we believe is going to work best, and allow those terms to then move forward into guiding the rest of the conversation and the family's interaction with each other. Because the question here is about priorities. Why am I having this celebration? What do I hope to gain from it? And then to move forward in that direction. After that, we speak with Cheryl Hughes. Venerable Fulton J. Sheen, today is the anniversary of his passing. He was one of America's great spiritual leaders of the last century. His Emmy-winning television show reached millions, and he was a household name throughout the 1950s and 60s. But his great gift was in finding the lost sheep. Cheryl and I talk about this. And then I end by sharing my own commentary on Archbishop Fulton Sheen. And my reasoning why is because I think many people don't understand, especially here in American Catholicism, that Fulton Sheen didn't just help define Catholicism here in the United States. Fulton Sheen shaped a global Catholic culture. I mean this sincerely, in no uncertain terms. Even in some of the hotbeds of unfaithful doctrine, Fulton Sheen's works find a kind of staple foothold. All of this is to say that Sheen, whether intentionally or not, is a global mainstay. And we need to address the power of one person to shape a global culture for the sake of Christ, and then to take a look at our present digital age and to ask ourselves, what would Fulton Sheen call us to? All this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, December 9th. It's the Feast of St. Juan Diego. Today's news is brought to you by the nonprofit RevivBap. Looking for peace in this chaotic world? A certified spiritual companion can help on the Revive app. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3. The New York Archdiocese is setting aside hundreds of millions of dollars for sexual abuse victims. Cardinal Timothy Dolan releasing a statement Monday saying the Archdiocese was setting up a $300 million fund that would compensate people who have sued the church over sexual abuse allegations. Dolan says the church plans to sell off assets and trim its budget to raise the money needed for the fund. The hope is that the fund will cover almost all of the nearly 1,300 outstanding sexual abuse claims against the church. Pope Leo and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky met in Italy today. In a statement, the Vatican said the pontiff reiterated the need for the continuation of dialogue. Zelensky says he told the pope about diplomatic efforts with the United States to achieve peace. The Federal Reserve is widely expected to lower interest rates as policymakers wrap up their final meeting of the year tomorrow. Many believe the Fed will cut interest rates by a quarter percentage point. It would be the third straight cut, with credit card rates at their lowest level since April of 2023. The Diocese of Providence, Rhode Island, says Bishop Bruce Landowski has approved the merging of two Pawtucket parishes. Parishioners were told this weekend that St. Mary of the Immaculate Conception Parish will merge into the St. John the Baptist Parish, as well as the Holy Family Parish merging into St. John II. According to the diocese, the mergers are the result of declining mass attendance, limited sacramental activity, and a decrease in parish activities. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, talking with my friend Dr. Gregory Popcheck. He's no stranger to this program. He and his bride, Lisa, co-host More to Life for EWTN, and they're also the developers of the Catholic HOM Network and the HOM app. You can follow their work, Catholic HOM. Greg, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Marcus.
So let's talk about, we are in the wake of Thanksgiving, and we're moving towards yet another family celebration because we simply can't get enough of these large family gatherings.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah. Anyway, so what I want to talk about actually is how, you know, when we get through any event. I mean, this applies to the holidays especially, but it really speaks to anything we go through that we'd like to do better. You know, we have a tendency to just sort of say, thank heavens that's over with, right? We get through the experience, and then we don't want to think about it again. But when we do that, we rob ourselves of the opportunity to do better in the future. Or, you know, the opposite's true, too, where we'll go through something and say, oh, that was wonderful. And we, you know, chalk it up to good luck, and we don't think, how could I replicate that? And so what I'd like to do is just take this moment to ask our listeners to reflect a little bit on their Thanksgiving experience. And what lessons they could take from it to have a merrier, more peaceful and joyful Christmas and other, you know, and more rewarding family gatherings in the future. This is actually, you know, every week on the Catholic Home app, we have a deeper dive discussion. And this is the conversation we're having now. You know, families made it through Thanksgiving. So what are those lessons that they want to take from that experience? You know, whether they had a painful time or difficult aspects of that experience, what things could they learn from that and do differently so that they could set themselves up for a better Christmas? Or what things went really well that they might want to replicate? But those are questions that we don't tend to naturally spend a whole lot of time on.
Why is it we don't naturally spend those time pondering that? You would think that if you find things that work, you would want to be able to systematically replicate that.
You know, the theology of the body speaks to that by talking about how we tend to live in reactivity rather than receptivity. Mm. You know, the idea that we're sort of living in the moment but not in a healthy way. You know, we're reacting to the stuff that pops up in front of us. We're so busy and consumed with all the things that we get through this thing and say, okay, now on to the next thing. But we don't really pause and reflect and especially pray about those experiences that we've had, so that we can see what God might be asking us to learn from those experiences so that we can do better moving forward. So this is an invitation to kind of do that practice that I think is probably hidden in plain sight. As you say, it's sort of obvious, and when I say it makes sense, right? But it doesn't occur to us because we're so consumed with just moving on to the next thing that we forget that we can do something about it. You know, so if it was a bad experience, you know, what things might we want to change moving forward and give ourselves permission to look at differently so that we can set ourselves up for a better experience as opposed to just repeating the same misery over and over again? Or if it went really well, or at least some part of it did, what do we want to do to make sure that that happens again?
As you're speaking, I'm realizing that for a lot of our listeners, one of the reasons why we can want to throw ourselves into activity is there's a lot of anxiety and sometimes dread about coming family celebration. Could you comment on whether that's one reason why we don't stop to be receptive to things that worked?
Yeah, you know, and especially with when it comes to family stuff, you know, we grew up in those families, and as children, there's not a lot of there's not a lot of agency, right? You know, as a child, I just sort of have to go through and go along with whatever the family's doing. And so I sort of, there's a kind of a learned helplessness that comes from that, right? Where, okay, I'm, you know, now I'm 20 or I'm 40 or I'm 60 and I still have to just go along with it. No, you don't. You know, the relationship has changed. You're an adult now. You have more resources, insight, influence, and you can do something different now. And sometimes it's hard to break out of that mindset. But I think giving ourselves permission to recognize that we are adults and we can affect change even in our families. And so what changes would we want to affect to make it go better or to replicate that thing that did go well? And honestly, I mean, this kind of solution-focused thinking is just a helpful way to approach any problem in our life. You know, anytime we go through a hard time, there's a lesson to be learned so that the next time this comes along, we can handle it better. Or anytime we have a good day, there's some lessons to take from that. So we can say, you know what? All this sort of happened accidentally and made me happy, but what if I actually did this intentionally to make myself happy tomorrow? It's a different perspective on it, but it's empowering and solution-focused, and it stops us from being passive recipients of life and enables us to be active participants in it. And so we're just applying that concept to the holidays here so that we can make some changes and hopefully create a better experience for us and everybody that we love.
So one of the things you and Lisa do on your program and on the Catholic HOM network is to give some practical steps as to how we can take stock, you know, take inventory of this worked, this didn't, how to pay attention to them. Can you briefly walk us through some of that?
Yeah. So, are you talking about the larger framework of the Liturgy of Domestic Church Life? You mean,
or? I mean, I guess so. But I've also heard you and Lisa, you know, guide people through. Okay, ask yourself during dinner what worked, what didn't.
Oh yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So, in that example, what you're talking about here is, you know, that's more of an anticipatory thing where you know, we are trying to manage everybody's expectations. So let's say you're having dinner together as a family. And rather than just letting the evening go as it goes, saying, you know, what do we need from each other this evening? You know, what are some things we could do to take better care of each other? What are things that are important for us to get out of the rest of the day? You know, so that we can communicate, you know, what the expectations are and how we can be there for it. Another way to use that, you know, for example, we talk to a lot of couples where, you know, the husband and the wife maybe are coming home from work. Or the husband's coming home and the wife's at home, whatever. But they have different expectations. So before they get back together again, before they leave the workplace or before they come home, you know, it's just touching base on the phone or, you know, by text for a few minutes and say, hey, so what do you have planned for the evening? And this is what I'd like to get out of it. And just trying to coordinate some of that stuff. So again, being intentional about what do you hope will be, you know, what do you hope to have happen and how can we work together to make that happen, as opposed to what usually happens where we all just come home and have those different expectations for how the evening is going to go, and then we step all over each other and nothing gets done.
I think it's easy for all of us to fall into the latter. You know, like you said, we get into the activity of, okay, this is something we have to do, but we don't think about setting expectations ahead of time.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things that's just so simple and obvious. It's hidden in plain sight, and we don't do it. But if we could remember to do these simple things, it really is very empowering. You know, all of a sudden, I don't just have to dread the thing that's coming down the road. I can take charge of it, and I can cooperate with God's grace to make it into something better, something that maybe even glorifies Him, and that allows me to be more of the kind of self that I want to be, and invite the other people around me to do that too. I mean, you know, and that sounds kind of highfalutin, but I mean, it can be simple as coming up with, you know what, we're all such different people as a family. I want to just come up with some funny questions that we're going to discuss. So I'll give you an example of that. So we got together with some extended family over the holiday, the Thanksgiving holiday, and we had some silly questions like, you know, what Christmas movie is a red flag for you? You know, if somebody likes that, it makes you suspicious of them. My son has it. If you were going to be a were-animal, what would be your favorite were-animal? I mean, just crazy questions, but it was fun to talk about and laugh together about these things. And, you know, we didn't argue about politics, right? We didn't argue about religion. We were just able to recognize that we were all just people doing our best to kind of come together and have a good time with each other and celebrate the gift of family.
Now, the great debate every Christmas time at Christian dinner tables tends to be whether Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
Yeah, I'm going to fall on the not side of that one. I enjoy the movie, but I don't see that as a Christmas movie. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for your time. This was very practically helpful. I'm very grateful for it.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to be here.
My guest has been Dr. Gregory Popchick. He and his bride, Lisa, co-host More to Life on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. And he's been sharing with us how to build a reasonable set of expectations based on what worked over Thanksgiving into what we can expect for Christmas and New Year's and spending time with family and planning ahead accordingly. Greg gave us really practical tips that we can follow with and hopefully have fruitful celebrations with our families. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend Tom Monahan.
First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Hello, I'm Marian Kuharski with Pro-Life Across America. Did you know that a billboard can save a baby's life? When our billboards and radio ads are running, we receive hundreds of calls from those seeking pregnancy information and support. Every caller is connected to a local center offering free ultrasound and confidential counseling. Won't you join us in this life-saving effort? Donate today and help us do more. No gift is too small. That's prolifeacrossamerica.org.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing our pilgrimage to charming Ireland and its rich Catholic heritage. The shrines are nestled in the quaint Emerald Isle. Lovely people, marvelous food, sweeping vistas. Everyone's favorite is Mass at Our Lady of Knock and its Eucharistic apparition. We hope you can join us in August, along with our Irish chaplain, Father James Conlon.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Support for this Ave Maria Radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Alex Peter. Archbishop Fulton Sheen, to this day, is remembered as one of the most noteworthy media evangelists in recent Catholic history. And a recent book highlights essentially a kind of memoir. It highlights those ups and downs in his journey of the work of evangelization, but also some of his personal struggles in his life as a first priest, then bishop, and evangelist. The author is Cheryl C.D. Hughes. She holds a PhD in historical theology from Durham University in England. And the title of the book that we're talking about is Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen, Convert Maker. Cheryl, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much. And how are you today?
I'm well, thank you. And I'm very appreciative that you wrote this book. And I want to start by saying that you did a good job of not canonizing the man. You really highlighted the very genuine human struggles that he underwent in his entire journey, not just in priesthood, but even generally in the work of evangelization.
Thank you. One of the things he used to say was that God didn't call angels to be priests, he called men.
Yeah. That's true. And I think that really highlights everything he grappled with. So let's begin this narrative here. Many of us know him, especially from his TV work. In Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, I remember when I was studying my way into the church, someone introduced me to the recordings that he had put out on Your Life is Worth Living, and that was part of my study into the Catholic Church. And I know, and this was long, of course, after he had passed, but Let's begin the narrative there. He didn't always set out to be one of the most prominent evangelists of the modern age, especially in light of being in front of a camera. That wasn't his goal at all.
Well, heavens no. He was a priest, mm-hmm. and a priest, one of his main goals is to win souls. He said, if we're not saving souls, nothing is saved. And I think he really starts out to be the best he can be. And eventually, on radio, it took him very high. We might, you know, because life is worth living and we're in a video culture, we forget that the radio was a huge influence, and he was on the radio for 20-some years mm-hmm. with his preaching. And so that really predates the television. So he came into radio in its golden age when it was reaching to every household it possibly could. His audience was enormous. And then it exploded when he went on to television. I don't know that he could have foreseen that he would be the celebrity priest that he turned out to be.
Yeah. And I think that's important to highlight that, yes, he began this work on radio, and it was really his advent into television work that really cast him into the global light. But in a very particular way, this was a man who was in love with Christ and therefore in love with the souls that Christ had put in his care. He was so concerned about the salvation of souls. And as you mentioned, meditation before the Eucharistic Christ was the essential life force, if you will, for how he powered through the rest of the day.
You know, I think people probably would think that somebody who's a celebrity priest somehow might not have all that priestly of a prayer life, but his prayer life was really, really important to him, and he started that hour of devotion when he was in college, early on in seminary. He also was commended to the Virgin Mary by his mother, and then again, he also offers himself to the Virgin Mary. And he was in love.
Yeah.
In fact, he calls Mary the world's first love. He was in love with Jesus and in love with Mary, and therefore really in love with all of God's people. Really, he was a kind soul. He reached out to everybody, and while he might have been a great and essentially wealthy celebrity, though he gave away all of his money, he also was there for the down and out, for the lepers. I mean, he just was amazing with lepers.
He did that especially in his work in the Philippines, and I kind of don't want to jump ahead in the narrative there because that's such a pivotal part of his story. So if you don't mind, I'd like to backtrack a little to think about those early years of his life in parish ministry and his eventual entry into the work of radio apostolate.
You know, he did not have much of a life in parish ministry. I mean, he became an archbishop, but in fact, he was only ever assigned to a parish for 8 months after he finished all of his graduate school and came back to the United States. He went to graduate school in Belgium, and when he came back, he had offers to teach at Oxford and Louvain and NYU, and he said to his bishop, "Which one shall I take?" And the bishop said, "Come home." And he sent him to a very small inner-city parish.
Yeah.
And I think that was the only time he ever really lived in a rectory for any length of time.
Mm-hmm.
So his early parish life was important to him because this was a very poor parish. And he went around and he visited every single person on the church rolls and then every single person in the neighborhood who wasn't on the church rolls. And he began to make converts right there. So he was sort of set in his ways. He was going to be winning souls however he could.
Yep. And if he couldn't utilize the media, just put him on a soapbox, he would have stood at the side of the street preaching the gospel. And
somebody said if he came out wearing a barrel and reading the New York Yellow Pages, they would have loved him anyway.
I could see that. I could truly see that.
Now, he was a character, but he was extremely serious about his prayer life. And as you say, I really think that formed the foundation of every single thing he did for the rest of his life once he became ordained as a priest.
Now, Cheryl, one of the things that I think we often take for granted is, even in his work in radio apostolate, he was very careful. He's an extremely erudite man. This was a man who was brilliant theologically and philosophically. But he was very concerned about making sure that the work he did benefited the salvation of souls above all else. And this was a almost constant struggle for him to make sure that while he dove the depths of this faith, he made it so that everyone could partake of it.
Well, that is being a brilliant teacher.
Yeah.
One of the things he said he always tried to do with the group was to find out where they were kind of on the same level, and then he would go from there. So he would identify the familiar, and then use that as a springboard into something much more esoteric, much more theologically deep. Mm-hmm. But even when he did things that were theologically deep on the radio and later on television, he was able to distill them down so that the common person could understand them. And that's a gift. The gift of a really good teacher, to be able to do that. He said, I get on the radio, later television, up to the classroom, you know, in the classroom, because he taught so many years at the University of the Catholic University of America. I do this to win souls.
Yeah. How much?
Very clear about what he wanted.
How much do you think the parallel apostolate of people like Frank Sheed of Sheed and Ward aided in this great boom of catechesis that took place? Because they're both really booming in their own ways, Sheed and Ward through publishing and Archbishop Fulton Sheen through his work of evangelization in the media, but also in writing.
Yes, yes. The young Frank Sheed, I don't think, cared much for Bishop Sheen, which is shocking, but I do think that there were many people in and out of the church who resented him, who were envious of him. The young Frank Sheed said that he didn't think that Fulton Sheen had anything to do with the conversion of Claire Booth Luce, and that's ridiculous.
Well, we are continuing this conversation with Cheryl Hughes, author of Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen, Convert Maker, published by Ignatius Press. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Life can be overwhelming, leaving you feeling anxious, alone, or even in despair. That's why the nonprofit Revive app was created, to help you navigate the darkness and discover the light. With Revive, confidential conversations with a certified spiritual companion are always just a tap away. And right now, your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3. Let them help you find joy in tomorrow.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
What comes to your mind when you hear the word passion? Passion often signifies intensity of emotions and feelings, frequently in terms of lust. But the Catholic Catechism tells us passions are neither good nor bad in and of themselves. In other words, passions are morally good if they contribute to a good action, and evil if they bring about the opposite result. The most fundamental passion is love, says the Catechism. It is aroused by attraction to the good, the desire to attain the good, and fulfilled by joy and pleasure once the good is possessed. Evil, on the other hand, arouses hatred, aversion, and fear. Passions are the passageway connecting the senses and the mind. Jesus said the source of all passions was the human heart. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. Feeding 5,000 from a boy's 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, as recorded in John chapter 6, is quite a miracle. Yet the next day, Jesus downplays it in verse 27. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. Likewise, God's provision of manna to the Israelites in the desert was also a great miracle, yet Jesus similarly downplays it in verse 49. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, but they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. Jesus is clearly stating that his Eucharist is greater than both of these amazing miracles, and the Catholic Church absolutely takes him at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. My guest, Cheryl Hughes, author of Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen, Convert Maker, published by Ignatius Press. Cheryl, we were talking earlier about how despite his best efforts, there were inevitably people who were anywhere from jealous of him who to even resenting him. And yet he took that in stride, and he even highlighted that as part of his own journey. He, especially being made bishop, he realized that he had become a little worldly. He had to pull back into a true sense of humility of the office. So this was not a man who was unaware of his own failings in the great calling that God had on his life.
No, he certainly wasn't unaware. He, I think, really the beginning of his humility was when he went on his trip around Asia with Cardinal Spellman.
Mm-hmm.
He saw poverty there that he'd never seen in the United States. He saw illness there like he'd never seen anyplace else. And I think he came home and he had to recalibrate just a bit. And then eventually he becomes a bishop in Rochester, and that was not a happy occasion for him necessarily. Mm-hmm. Though, as in hindsight and irony, much of what he proposed there actually came into being. But he was moving too fast, having never been in a parish before. You know, being a regular priest,
Yeah. He
really wasn't quite sure how to react to priests, and coming off of his great contributions to the propagation of the faith,
mm-hmm.
obviously that's the world missions, he just got even more humble as time went on.
Yeah, and this became very clear in how he spoke about his own bishopric, even simple things like his pectoral cross being turned into a crucifix, the ring that he had, he turned it into, he changed it out for a silver
right.
ring with the Blessed Mother in Mother of Pearl. So he was doing these smaller things to become tangible reminders of who he ought to be and what he's actually called to do.
You know, he also wore a hair shirt.
Mm.
Somewhere towards the end. So I think of his prayer life as being very Lenten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're to pray, which he always did, if we're to give alms, which he always did, and fast, he hardly ever ate anything. He gave away absolutely everything that he ever earned from his 60 books and hundreds and hundreds and pamphlets that were published, and he eventually wore the hair shirt, I think, as a reminder to himself that he is not the great man. Of course, he says when he became bishop, he loved the softness of the prayer du and loved the idea that he would get preferential treatment,
mm-hmm.
and he thought that was just, you know, something that made him, and it took him a very short while to realize that he wasn't this great creature. As he was talking earlier, I said that God didn't call angels to be priests. He called men, and he realized that he was a very fallible man, and I think tried everything he could to keep his feet on the ground at the same time when people are just, you know, calling out to him all the time. He was with his nephew one time, and they just were going through a hotel lobby. People were coming up and stuffing money into his pockets. And as soon as they would go outside, he'd see a beggar. He'd give it all away, even the coat off of his back. So he's extremely, extremely jealous, generous. And at the same time, you know, he's filling himself up with our Lord in the Eucharist.
Yeah.
With it, very important for him.
Now, the issues that he faced weren't just in terms of the interior spiritual battle that he constantly made sure to stand up against. He also, there were certain external political, socio-political issues. You had World War II, you had the great rise of secularism and this movement away from this theological, or at least a kind of worldview of God being at the center of the culture, and therefore the great rise of communism. And talk about some of the exchanges and the relationship that he had with Louis Francis Budins, the American activist and communist writer.
Oh, yes. He had... Louis Budins was a very, very interesting fellow. He was kind of like Bishop Sheed in that he was a Catholic boy from a Midwestern city. And he began to favor the underdog. And he thought eventually that the Catholic Church wasn't doing enough or fast enough to create this brotherhood of man, but that was the promise, really the euphoric promise of communism in those early days. And so he one time wrote an article against communism. He was directed by Pope Pius XI in the mid-30s to, he said, as long as I'm in my pontificate, I want you to always write against the communists.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had been writing against the communists, and he had a quite acerbic column that he put out against the communists. And of course, Louis Budins, who was the editor of the Catholic Worker, the Daily Worker, had to respond to that. And so he was really, you know, come, Monsignor. He wasn't a bishop yet at this time. Mm-hmm. Come, Monsignor. You will, join us in this fight. We will join this fight against fascism. And he talked to Budins, called him up and said, let's meet for dinner. And so they did meet, and they discussed communism, and he was absolutely nonplussed to find out that Fulton Sheen knew much more about communism than he did. Sheen had read the Communist Constitution. Yeah. He read everything written by Marx and Engels and anything that came out from Lenin. He was very well versed in that milieu because of what the Pope had told him, and also because of the Virgin had said, come pray for the conversion of Russia with Fatima. And Budins believed everything he said, but he could not leave communism.
Yeah,
it took
him
8 more years to work his way to where he actually could leave the party. And he was terrified, of course, to leave the party because, you know, some of them said, well, you never leave the party. You are thrown out or you're killed. You never leave the party. And if you leave the Catholic Church, you only lose your soul. But if you leave the Communist Party, you might lose your life.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a constant fight for him. In fact, he had trouble with the producers of his radio show because he spent so much time railing against the communists.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a huge issue for him. He really, really worried that communism would destroy the United States, would destroy the Catholic Church. Or I think at heart he knew that it couldn't destroy the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church is never going to be defeated because Jesus is our head.
Yep.
So, at any rate, it was just ongoing. And finally, he went over. He took. He did not have to take communion. He had been in an illicit or irregular relationship, so he had to take care of that. And his wife and his three daughters all converted. And bless his heart, Fulton Sheen got him out of town to Indiana, where he taught at Notre Dame, economics at Notre Dame for a while, before he moved on to some other places. But his main occupation once he converted was as anti-communism.
Cheryl, I want to say thank you so much for making the time to speak with us. This was but a snippet of the many things you uncover in Fulton Sheen's life. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you so very much for having me. I enjoyed it tremendously.
My guest, Cheryl Hughes, author of Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen, Convert Maker, published by Ignatius Press. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Advent is here, and Ave Maria Radio wants to walk beside you every day as we move towards the birth of Jesus. When you visit AveMariaRadio.net, you can join our Advent mission and receive short, powerful, and engaging daily videos that help you enter the mystery of the Incarnation with new clarity and devotion. Go to the slider at AveMariaRadio.net, sign up, and take your place in this joyful journey to the manger.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You remember the time I sent on the air? Go to confession. And when you're done, go out and have a big ice cream soda. Celebrate. And a man wrote to me, he says, you know, I hadn't gone to confession in 30 years. Do you mind if I went and had a pizza? I said, oh, have 20 pizzas.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
In the midst of our culture today, in this age of relativism, which wants to grant Jesus some significance, but not so much, so we'll give him wise man, great leader, inspiring preacher, great teacher, prophet. You don't get that option when you claim to be God. What reasons do we have to believe that he is who he said he is? And it's important, again, to employ the use of our reason and to understand that faith is not blind. My faith, and please God, the faith of everyone here, is not blind. It rests on something. It rests on a number of things, not least of which is my own experience of God, but it also has something substantial which can be claimed through history. We're not talking about a galaxy long, long ago, far, far away when we talk about Jesus. We're talking about a precise moment in history which has been testified to by countless testimonies, and you and I have access to them.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out, and all my other books on the store page at avemariaradio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Fulton Sheen occupies an unusual place in Catholic memory because his legacy refuses to sit quietly on any shelf. Through a curious blend, philosophical gravity, theological fidelity, pastoral instinct, rhetorical magnetism, and cultural presence, he altered the global Catholic culture in a way that outpaced even the church's expectations of the 20th century. Don't get me wrong, many Catholic figures shaped regions. Sheen shaped continents. Many spoke to the faithful. Sheen spoke to the world. And moreover, the world listened. So any honest reckoning with his legacy requires a sober analysis of the intellectual and pastoral engine that he was. I mean, Sheen emerged as a thinker with a capacity for synthesis that startled his contemporaries. His philosophical training guided him through the thickets of metaphysics, anthropology, ethics, and he had a clarity that generated tremendous confidence in his audience, who sensed that he had walked into the labyrinth ahead of them. And so he combined rigorous philosophical inquiry with faithful theological exposition, but he did this in a manner that revealed the unity of truth rather than the strained relationship that often appears in lesser hands, and his ability to translate dense ideas into incisive prose provided him with a rare gift. He managed to examine the worst and the best of culture with equal sobriety, and he did so placing the Catholic vision at the center of every moral argument. He had an ability to show that the truth could be spoken into all things without apology, without spectacle, without the indulgent tremors of self-congratulatory academic performance. His mind had a precision. It moved with the reassurance that even skeptical readers had about Catholicism, because he had intellectual foundations that could withstand the pressures of modernity. When Sheen stepped into his pastoral identity, many people wondered if this brilliance would hinder his capacity to accompany real human beings, but instead, his fatherly heart revealed itself with even greater force. His pastoral encounters never resembled classroom exercises. They were kind of spiritual surgery of sorts. There was one story in particular that illustrates this. There was a woman who once berated him at a public talk, and she did it with a fury that many speakers would have deflected. But Sheen paused the talk to invite her to make an appointment with him later and to speak with him privately. And so she arrived with the same intensity and anger, and she continued her barrage. Sheen listened with the calm attentiveness of a father until he perceived something that only seasoned spiritual discernment can detect. He responded with an unexpected insight. He said, "You know what I think? I think you've had an abortion." And in that moment, the woman collapsed into tears and sighed. The anger was gone. The facade had melted away. And she sighed, "Yes." And Sheen handled this confession of hers with compassion rather than triumph. This pastoral moment demonstrated that his intellectual brilliance guided his fatherly concern for souls. His mind could operate like a scalpel, and his heart always was beating with the gentleness of a shepherd. As an orator, Sheen stood apart. I mean, this was a century saturated with public voices, but his mastery of presentation dynamics was legendary. I remember I've been public speaking since I was just about 8 or 9, and there are certain things you learn along the way when people are training you, and listening to Sheen, you get the impression this is a man who studied the craft. He was a master at it. His recordings from his television program still reveal this outstanding command of pacing, gesture, tone, humor. Few people could match it. He never treated communication as a trivial task. He treated it as a sacred medium through which truth could pierce the fog of confusion. This capacity enabled him to grip listeners across denominational lines, ideological backgrounds, cultural boundaries. Audiences with minimal exposure to Catholic thought found themselves arrested by his cadence. His oratory created an atmosphere of confident engagement that revealed something significant. Catholicism refused to retreat into insular safety. Catholicism could step into modern media environment without losing its soul. His authorship extended that same confidence. Sheen's engagement with culture, literature, poetry, art, social dynamics, all of these displayed an intellectual range that drew comparisons to Paul in the Areopagus. There are very few people whom I think of in this way. Al Cresta was one of them. He moved among the great works of Western literature with ease, Sheen did. He also understood how to interpret modern existential anxieties with pastoral love. Sheen never indulged in cultural despair. He approached human experience with generous curiosity, and he invited readers to see the gospel as the interpretive lens for every facet of life. His books became guides for countless believers who needed assistance integrating faith with the complexities of a shifting world. The fact that his recording influenced readers across the globe and listeners across the globe, including me, all the way from Kuala Lumpur, as an anti-Catholic no less, reveals the vast footprint of his cultural impact. His work reached souls who had never seen American Catholicism in person. The written word and his spoken word on audio traveled where geography restricted missionary presence. His influence also shaped global Catholic culture in a specific direction. Sheen demonstrated that Catholic cultural engagement could be bold, decisive, witty, entertaining, intellectually rigorous, but emotionally compelling and theologically faithful. He refused to compartmentalize the faith. He refused to reduce evangelization to private consolation. He revealed that the gospel carries a cultural claim, and he embraced this claim with fearless joy. Catholics around the world began to see in Sheen a model of cultural presence that refused timidity. Through his radio and television appearances, he showed how a Catholic voice could enter the public square with courage and clarity while retaining the pastoral tenderness required by Christian charity. His presence in the media landscape actually proved Catholics, you and I can engage the modern world confidently while still remaining anchored in Christian tradition. And that's why Sheen's impact unfolded through several layers. In the academic sphere, for example, he raised expectations for what Catholic intellectual engagement ought to accomplish. In the pastoral sphere, he reinforced the church's duty, accompany souls through crisis in truth. In the cultural sphere, he showed us that Catholicism has to inhabit public life without diluting the gospel. And through each layer, he constructed a template for cultural engagement that Catholics could use to transcend barriers, geographic, linguistic, you name it. Many countries without strong theological infrastructure relied on translated Sheen texts to form their Catholic imagination. He seldom traveled outside of North America, but he had tremendous influence in Asia, Africa, Latin America, Europe. One encounters Catholics from multiple cultures who credit Sheen with their earliest understanding of how the faith relates to art, reason, culture, and personal conversion. This global reach indicates something important about our faith itself. Sheen is a testimony that the Catholic faith has the organic strength to allow it to speak into every age and every environment. Catholic anthropology, which is the definition and study of the human person, the Catholic moral vision, the sacramental imagination, all of these can find expression in context when shaped by different histories because truth carries a universality. Truth can be applied across boundaries, and Sheen harnessed the tools of his era to preach that truth into the world. He showed how Catholics ought to enter cultural arenas without hesitation, without fear that modernity will swallow them. He proved that confidence in truth generates freedom rather than fragility. And through his witness, Catholics learned that evangelization thrives when the faithful develop both cultural fluency but also intellectual depth. Sheen's legacy now functions as an exhortation and warning, because he worked with limited technological resources compared to what we have today. Television and radio offered only a fraction of the reach that is available through digital media platforms. If Sheen cultivated global influence with mid-century broadcast tools, then Catholics of the present era, you and I have an uncomfortable question. Are we striving to become similarly effective evangelizers of culture? Are we using our unprecedented access to digital distribution as instruments for Jesus' gospel rather than for sharing memes? Sheen would have recognized the spiritual potential of today's media. He would have understood digital culture shapes imagination at a speed unknown in previous eras. He would have expected Catholics to use these resources with intentionality. His life reminds us evangelization requires skill and sanctity. Sheen cultivated both prayer, academic study, faithfulness to the sacraments, disciplined communication. His example challenges Catholics to regard culture as mission territory rather than just social backdrop. And his writings still awaken dormant curiosity. His pastoral witness calls us to spiritual maturity. His oratory demonstrates that truth can captivate without resorting to spectacle. And his global influence reveals that one faithful voice can recalibrate an entire world's generation in their perception of Catholicism. Through all of this, Sheen is more than an historical figure. He is a mirror held up to our generation today. His question lingers. With all our tools, knowledge, and access, will we offer the world a witness equal in clarity and courage as Fulton Sheen? Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.